this is Kendra Brodeen with WomenLawyersOnline.com, and today I'm honored to bring you a conversation with Edith Osselman. Understanding the importance of women taking leadership roles in order to open the legal system to other women, Edith Osselman has repeatedly forged new paths for women. Edith, who served as the president of the Florida Bar from 1999 to 2000, was the second woman to be elected to the Florida Bar's top position in its 50-plus year history, and had one of the least number of years in practice when she assumed the presidency. During her tenure, she was noted, among many achievements, for having created the Commission on the Legal Needs of Children and having created a book that documented the history of the first 150 women lawyers in Florida. Edith has worked tirelessly to promote women's rights since she became vice president, then president, of Miami Law Women at the University of Miami School of Law. After graduation, she immediately became active in the Florida Association for Women Lawyers and became president of the Dade County chapter within 4 years. During those years, she worked on and chaired fundraising events to benefit at-risk children and battered women. In her year as chair of the Florida Association for Women Lawyers and the chair of that fundraiser, she raised $37,000, and that was donated to an organization called Safe Space. She went on to become president of the Florida Association for Women Lawyers statewide, continuing to work to further the goals and stature of women. Continuing to open doors for women, she was elected to the Council of Voluntary Bar Presidents and ultimately became president of the council, the first woman to hold that position. She later became the first woman to receive the Outstanding Past Voluntary Bar President's Award. She was next elected to the Florida Bar Board of Governors, the small but powerful policymaking arm of the Florida Bar. She was the first woman elected to serve in the Florida Bar Board of Governors Executive Committee. Many of the policies of the board involved women and children's issues, allowing her to continue working to raise the public's consciousness and pass rules which inured their benefit. After 6 years on the board, Edith ran for and was elected as president of the Florida Bar. During her presidency, there were 66,000 members of the Florida Bar. As president, Edith recognized that children were frequently negatively impacted or not properly represented by existing laws. To address this problem, Edith created the Commission on the Legal Needs of Children, which ultimately published a report identifying these needs and providing recommendations on how to resolve these issues, which to this day are being enacted. Edith also created the first joint project between the Florida Bar and the Florida Association of Women Lawyers, which resulted in a celebratory dinner attended by 900 people and a book which researched and documented the first 150 female members of the Florida Bar. To further provide access to women lawyers, she set a record high number of appointments of women to bar committees. Continuing her goal of opening doors for women, this year Edith is the first female attorney president of the Supreme Court Historical Society. Edith has been the recipient of many awards recognizing her service to the community, her profession, and opening doors to women. This includes the Anti-Defamation League's highest honor, the Jurisprudence Award, as well as the Women of Impact Award 19 by the Women's History Coalition of Miami-Dade County. Most recently, she was recognized as one of the 10 distinguished attorneys throughout South Florida in the South Florida Legal Guide's 10th anniversary issue, and she received the Woman Extraordinaire Award from Business Leader Magazine, which honors women of outstanding accomplishment and leadership in South Florida. Edith went to law school full-time with 2 children, ages 2 and 6. While doing that, she earned her Juris Doctorate degree cum laude from the University of Miami. She is most proud of having raised 2 wonderful children while achieving success as an attorney and as a leader in her profession and community. In 2004, Edith took her entire family on a life-altering trip to Riga with a Latvian Holocaust survivors group to allow her parents an opportunity to reunite with their homeland after 60 years and to allow the family to see their roots through her parents' eyes. Edith, it's delightful to welcome you to the call today.
Well, thank you so much, Kendra. I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you. Let's just jump into the substance of the interview, and throughout that process, I will look forward to learning more about all of these groundbreaking initiatives you've been a part of and positions that you've held in Florida. I'm wondering, to get things started, if you were to look back over your career, your professional and educational career, and then also as a mother and your personal life, I'm wondering if you would say that you've always been good at or adept at balancing work and life and the competing priorities that you were experiencing, or if there was a critical time or juncture that you came to where you decided that you needed to balance and juggle things differently?
Well, Kendra, there probably was. I had my children pretty young, especially by today's standards, and that was before I went to law school. So I didn't have to do as much juggling then. But when my son was a year old and my daughter was 4, I decided to study for the LSATs. So I had to learn to do a little bit of juggling then, studying while he was napping. But when I went to law school with a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old, I definitely had to learn about juggling. And for me, the key that I found then that I have used throughout my career has been consistency. And what I mean by that was I kind of have to go all the time. I don't take days off, and I never did, for the sake of taking a day off. I feel like the tortoise and the hare, and I'm the hare because I just plod along. So when the kids were little, for example, when I was in law school, on Fridays in first year, you know, you were in a section then and everybody had the same schedule. And in our section, we got off at 2 o'clock on Friday afternoons. Well, all the other law students were, like, relieved. The week was over. They went out and played. They went to the beach. They did this. They did that. They went whatever they did. I don't honestly know what they did, you know, culminating probably in some happy hour on Friday night and partying. Well, while they did that, I forced myself to go to the library. Mm. And I'd, you know, have to kind of regroup, and I would study. And I'd study from 2 until whatever time I could manage before I had to go pick up the kids or whatever I had to do to connect with them, probably 6:30, and then I went home. So now if I did that from 2:30 to 6:30, I've gained 4 hours on everybody. And then Saturday morning, I would get up, and I studied. And I would have my husband go out with the kids, so I wouldn't have to drive to the library, and I wouldn't lose time at driving. And I'd sit there, and I'd study for a few hours until they came back. Now I've had 4 hours on Friday afternoon and 3 hours on Saturday morning, 7 hours. Most of the kids I went to law school with were probably first hitting the library at 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
And, you know, so that was how I had to have a lot of discipline. That was the key to how I was going to juggle things, you know, that I had to, you know, the old adage, you know, you want something done, give it to a busy person, because mm-hmm. they're going to find a way of fitting it in. And that's what I did. I struggled with my time constraints, and I used them very, very carefully. And then when I started practicing, the same thing. Fridays, I remember I'd see the guys that were younger than me. They started the same year. They'd leave, you know, 5 o'clock. They started filtering out for happy hour. Well, I worked. You know, I stayed at the office till 7:30. I had 2.5 hours on them, you know. They didn't come in again till Saturday afternoon after, you know, whatever. And then they were hungover from the night before. And, you know, they got in a few hours, all of which, you know, I had gotten in when nobody was looking. So, yeah, that was when I started it. And I have used the exact same methodology. I'm now practicing 27 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, as you said, that consistency and just kind of getting out of the gate earlier and staying out a little longer has been part of the reason that you've been able to keep it all together over those years.
Exactly.
Edith, exactly. What would you say then, as I can only imagine going to law school with 2 young children and how you were able to juggle that. So during law school and even since then, I'm wondering if there was one main challenge that you would say you faced in trying to balance the professional and the personal, your education and your practice against the demands of being a mother and your personal priorities? What would you say has been your biggest challenge?
Well, let me start by putting in a caveat about myself to know where my answers come from. Because, I mean, after I did that, if, you know, you read my, you know, biography, I went on to not just practice law, but to participate in a huge amount of professional and then later civic activities. So I'm now not only doing a lawyer's job, but I'm doing a whole nother job also. And so to me, that I think the biggest challenge was allowing my family to know that they, despite the fact that I did those other things, that they were the most important thing to me, that didn't impinge on my love for them, and that I would be there for them. Even though I wasn't there for them in the exact same way that a stay-at-home mom would have been.
Mm-hmm. How did you do that, Edith? Was it verbally that you would let them know, or were there certain things you would do with them or for them that somehow let them know that even when you weren't physically present, or as you said, you were doing things differently than, say, a stay-at-home mom would do, they were still your number one priority?
Well, I mean, I think that is a huge challenge, and I think it's a challenge to all busy women. And yes, one would be verbally, and the other would be that I would still try. I don't remember missing many sporting events or ballet recitals. So being there for those things, I think, was important to show them that. Every day, you know, that the phone was emergency central when they got home from school. And unless I was, you know, in a deposition or something where I couldn't take the calls, you know, we'd take the calls and we'd handle the problems. I didn't miss Halloweens, you know. We came home late. But, you know, then I was there for homework and, you know, whatever else they needed. And after they went to bed, I would go back to my other project. But, you know, that's the challenge. That's
right.
That's the challenge. It's not an easy one.
Mm-mm. No, but it sounds like, as you said, it just, you do what you need to do when you need to do it. And maybe it means after the kids go to bed, you're back at the computer or back at work for a couple hours or up in the morning, but at least you got to do Halloween trick-or-treating or go to that recital or whatever it was. You found a way to get both done, maybe outside of traditional hours, but it got done.
Exactly.
Edith,
exactly.
What would you say has been sort of on the flip side of that challenge of just letting your family know, letting your loved ones know that they are your top priority, even though it looks different than maybe what their friends are experiencing at school, or, you know, letting them know that they are really number one for you? What would you say has been a large lesson or a large teaching that you've received, maybe just a bigger, more philosophical way about thinking about both work and life and how to pull them together in a way that's meaningful and feels good and harmonious in your life?
Well, I think the biggest lesson to come out of it all is that it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always the question, can you have it all? And maybe the answer is, that, you know, my answer is that you can have it. You can't have it all perfectly. You know, you can't be a mom that's there every second. You can't have that. And you can't be a lawyer that has no other responsibilities, or a volunteer to associations or professional activities that has no other responsibilities. But you can do them all successfully and raise wonderful children and be successful in your career. The other lesson is it's a lot of work, and you have to have the motivation and the drive to do that. it could have been less work for me if I hadn't taken on extra projects. And everybody has to know their own boundaries for that. Yeah, my life would have been a lot easier if I didn't do that, because they did take up time. But that your children, and I guess my other life lesson on that is that your children can actually really benefit by it, because you're creating a role model for them in their parents. It shows, excuse me, how you can be successful, and that you can do more than one thing, and that women can be leaders, and that women can achieve, and maybe we can have a woman who's president of the United States. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge lesson to me.
Exactly. Those are, well, all three very powerful lessons, just that, as you said, we can have it all. It maybe doesn't look like having it all sometimes, or it looks a little messy once in a while where we're juggling different things, but at the end of the day, we can go to bed knowing we served our clients well and we did right by our family, and in that way, we did have it all.
And maybe your children really learned a lot by watching you.
That's right. That's right. Well, and I think they do. And do you have sons or daughters or both? I think you said both.
Both. One
correct?
Of each.
Yeah. I think I have young children about the same age as you. Yours were when you were in law school. Mine are 6 and 4 right now. But when I ask them what they want to be when they grow up, it's fun for me to hear them list off about 8 different things, because they see me juggling all of those things. And of course, I would say, go get them, girl. You can do that. But as you said, it's that role model to see both for your son and your daughter that women can fulfill all of these different roles and do it gracefully and maybe not do it perfectly, which gives them the freedom to also make mistakes and learn from them and not see it as a personal failure but just as an opportunity to learn.
Exactly. And especially for the girls, it's a role model, but even for the boys, it's, mm-hmm. you know, it taught them that women don't have to be what that old-fashioned model was.
Right. So it looks very different. And yet, that women can still be great mothers. They're not going to sacrifice being a wife or being a mother at the altar of their profession, but that they can find ways to juggle both. And so for a son to also know that that's possible in, you know, maybe a future wife or a partner, however that looks, but to be open to her profession and not see it as a threat to what he might see as an ideal way of having a household.
Exactly.
Edith, I'm wondering if over your many years of practice and raising your children right in the thick of it, are there specific tools or strategies that you used, maybe technologically or maybe just ways of thinking about things or doing things? And you mentioned some of them in terms of scheduling and efficiency, but I'm wondering if there were things that a woman attorney who's listening to this interview or reading these words could glean from you and your experience something that she could implement rather easily and readily that might make life and law practice a little bit easier.
Yeah, I would have a few suggestions, particularly for female attorneys. I mean, I think if they're at a younger stage, so they're responsible to another attorney probably because they're being given assignments, I think one thing would be to, as early on as possible, allow the person that they're person or people that they're working with to have confidence that they will get the job done. I think it's very important to create that right away, because if they have that confidence, then you might be able to use other techniques like working from home occasionally, especially with technology the way it is. If they don't have that confidence, they're probably not going to be too happy not to see you in the office. Mm-hmm. But so what I guess I'm saying is you start off by building up a great rapport and a great reputation for your work product, and as you do that, and responsibility for getting it done on time and properly, as you do that, I think you'd be able to stretch more. Because, I mean, even we didn't have, when I started practicing, I mean, I didn't have a computer at home, you know. Mm-hmm. Now you have so many tools. But at the time, I didn't live right near the office. And let's say the kids had a show at 11 o'clock. Well, I didn't want to drive downtown to the office and drive back to the show. that meant you probably, or maybe they had it at 12 or 1, you know, so, you know, you might have been out for half the day or more. But you could have been working at home until the show started.
Right.
But, you know, you need to have the people have the confidence in you to know that whether you're at the office or not, you're going to get the job done. And as we said, those can be at different hours. You know, that was another trick or strategy of mine, you know, that I mentioned before. You know, time is fungible. The job has to be done. And you need to be available to the person who needs you there. But once they can see that you are, and that if you have to stay really late, you'll be there, you know, that's very important, too, especially in law. You know, if you've got a trial the next day, you can't really say, I have to leave at 5 o'clock because I'm going home to my kids. Mm-hmm. That's when my next piece comes in. You have to have a strong support network. Very, very, very important. So on most days, you can try and do things the way you want to. But when you can't, you have to have someone else there to be able to pick up your kids or stay late with your kids. So that you can have the flexibilities on the time it's possible. Because you can't get everything. You know, you can't go home early every day, and you can't say, I want to go to the school show, and you can't get everything. So you have to be responsible to be there at the times you really need to be there and pull out the plugs to do that. So you need a network. You need to use the technology to your benefit, you know, so that depending on your kids' ages, if you didn't finish because you left early to go to a school show or something, you can go home and finish at home and do it. And you have to have a lot of discipline. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the hardest thing to learn. That you just have to have a lot of discipline. And I guess the other thing, the downside of it is, I mean, there is a sacrifice. Obviously, you cannot do a good job and be a good mother and also have, you know, lots of free time for yourself. I mean, it's not going to happen. So you have to be willing to do that. And then manage your time well, have your support systems, have your priorities straight, where you need to be able to be there for your kids or where you're not. Build up the confidence of the people around you so that if you say, I really need to be somewhere on this day, you know, they're not going to be begrudging about it. What else? Also, I'd say from my end, a little bit on the other spectrum than where you are now, having been through it, let me share with you that it will all work out. So another strategy would be to take a deep breath and say, I know this is going to be okay, you know? I know my kids are going to be okay. I know I can do this. Because you can. I promise you. Anybody who wants to can. And I guess, you know, unfortunately, multitasking is a big deal, you know, because you need every minute you can get. So you need to learn to multitask as much as you can and, you know, except don't be on the phone while your kid's singing on stage. You know.
Exactly.
Pay attention when you have to, but multitask when you can.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I don't drive in a car without talking on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Because I either have to be talking to my family, my work, or my friends. Because I don't really have, you know, a lot of time to just sit around and catch up with people. And that continues to this day because I still have, even though my kids aren't little, I still have family, you know, and I still have friends. And all of that gets, you know, all of that is impinged on some. But, you know, if you've made the choice, you can do it. Mm-hmm. You can do it right.
And that, I think, as you said, for women who are very much in the thick of young children and building their practice and worrying that they won't be successful at doing either, those are words of comfort just to know that it's very doable. It's not easy, but it's possible and doable, and women like you have done it and done it well, and to just remember to do the best you can, to keep those priorities straight, as you the great suggestions you gave of being mindful of your reputation and allowing others to have confidence in you so that when you do need to leave for that recital or that event, they don't think twice about it because they know they can count on you to get done what you have promised to get done, and to also have that support network that really, when things get crazy and you can't be everywhere at once, that's there to hold it together for you.
Right. You know, I mean, I'm sure everybody has their things, but I remember distinctly, obviously, I couldn't drive the afternoon carpools. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we drove the morning carpools. So that somebody else would be there in the afternoon, you know, and there have been countless people in my life as time has gone by who've been very, very generous, you know, coaches that drove my son home after a practice if I was, you know, running late, or, you know, friends who let me drop the kids off early or a child off early because camp didn't open early enough, you know, for me to get to where I had to go. And you can pay it back in other ways. You know, you pay back the favor when you can pay back the favor.
That's exactly right. And I think other women, other people are very willing to help and glad to help if we just ask, and instead of thinking that we somehow have to do every single thing ourselves and pulling our hair out when that's physically impossible, if we can just think of resources like what you suggested or options. Well, maybe my son or daughter could go to this friend's house that's also going to the same activity or whatever, because people don't think twice about driving your child, especially if, you know, in the next week or 2 weeks later, you do something to help them out when maybe they have a doctor's appointment and their child comes over and plays. Who knows? But
exactly.
People are happy to help.
I found that, you know, I mean, there might have been times that people were a little bit more giving to me, but I always tried. You know, I'd always say on the week, you know, on the weekend, whenever I could, I'd try to reciprocate. I'd even offer it, you know, bring it up so that mm-hmm. I didn't have to wait for them to ask.
Right, exactly. And I think it builds relationships. It's good. The kids are always happy. They're excited to go somewhere
exactly.
else.
That's right. They didn't mind at all. No,
that's
they didn't
right.
mind at all.
Edith, terrific, terrific words of wisdom and also of comfort to, again, women who are very much in the thick of it and saying, I want to have a great practice, I want to be a great mom as you, I want to be very involved in my community, the bar associations, giving back in other ways, and yet I wonder if I can do it. And I just appreciate your words and you being a role model and letting other women know that it's very possible. It does take the discipline that you mentioned, and that's not always the easiest thing, but if we can discipline ourselves to do what we need to do when we need to do it, we can get it all done.
That's right. Exactly.
Edith, as we wrap up, are there any final words of wisdom or advice that you would like to share with other women attorneys who might be listening to or reading these words, just closing thoughts that you would like to impart to them?
Well, you know, I've been involved in so many women's issues over the years, and I guess some of it is that when they're struggling, they should know they're not alone. And when they're struggling and they think that there's still issues related to women, I think that's still true.
Mm-hmm.
But I've watched over the course of my career change, and I think the continuum keeps changing. There is certainly much more awareness of issues related to women in the profession, and even, you know, the challenge of juggling family and the profession, you know, that wasn't discussed before, and that everybody, that all the women should participate in those networks and give feedback to them, and by their own actions, you know, they're the ones that open the doors to the future to the next generation, and ultimately our daughters.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And as you said, and as I even read in your bio, so much of what you've done is about opening those doors for women. And sometimes, in many cases, you were one of the first to walk through those doors, but now those doors have been opened. And in that way, we are paying it forward, in essence, when now that door is open and maybe a woman comes after us, where we were the first to ask for something at our firm or in another, or the first to hold a position. But now it's so much more commonplace, and another woman doesn't have to struggle to walk through that door for the first
right.
time.
And not to be afraid to be the person to walk through the mm-hmm. door or to ask for something. Do it gracefully. do it appropriately, but do it. I mean, I still do that now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had, thank goodness, I've been blessed with many achievements. And still I have issues that arise where, you know, I think women are being treated differently and I still have to raise things or fight for things, and I do.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah, I think we may work through some issues, and then, like you said, we see other ones, and they're battles worth fighting, and so we need to work on those and ideally work on them together or build coalitions, but sometimes we just need to raise awareness on our own, too, and be ready to do that. As you said, not be afraid to be that first to let others know that there's a situation that could stand remedying and fixing and bettering.
Right.
Edith, I appreciate your time so much today, and I'm wondering if, as we close out our conversation, if you could share maybe your firm website or any other information you'd like to share with readers, listeners, other women attorneys who are a part of or experiencing our conversation. What would you like to share with them in terms of contact information?
Well, I'm an attorney at the law firm of Carlton Fields, and our website is Carlton. Hey, we are. I never even use it. It's just Carlton, www.carltonfields.com. I head up our family law division, and so you can locate me under the family law division, and it would reference, you know, any information about me, about my work, about what I've done in bar organizations, and, you know, likewise, you could Google my name and you'll see a lot of it also. And that's really the best way to contact me. I mean, I'm on the Board of Governors of the ABA, so I could be found that way. But you'd see it all on the website. That's just great. Great way to locate me. Thank you for asking.
Perfect, and thank you for sharing that, because I'm sure that there will be women who want to learn more about your work and what you're doing and maybe the firm and other things that you're up to. So thank you for sharing that. Edith, it's been delightful talking with you today and learning from you and being able to have this conversation that will then be passed on to other women attorneys that they might learn from you as well. So from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for your presence and your time and your words of wisdom this afternoon.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking to you too.
Well, with that, we'll close out our conversation with Edith. I appreciate her being here today so very much, and I also appreciate anyone who's listening or reading these words that you've taken the time to invest in yourself in order to make yourself both a better attorney and better in every aspect of your life. So until next time, this is Kendra Brodeen, founder and CEO of WomenLawyersOnline.com, wishing you real success always and in all ways. Thank you for being here today. Bye-bye.